Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. Excuse me. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like your prior shows, they're archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about being our best self. You know, people say be yourself. Well, let's be our best self. When we are leaders, when we are heading for a successful outcome, when we are negotiating, right? We need to be our best self. Not just ourselves, but our best. Yes. So how do we, yes, I am going to ask the basic question. People are already answering it. It's so fun. Yay! Thank you, everyone, for being here. So how do we be our best self? Well, how do we find it? How do we promote it? How do we know what's our best self? Yeah, how do we bring it? And of course, this is not a scripted show, so we take it where the conversation leads us. And I think by the answers, our first topic is going to be we bring our best self by being enthusiastic. Yeah, by being enthusiastic, by showing that, yes, you have confidence that we're going to make it. Yes. We're going to have a successful outcome. Yes, this is going to work. How exciting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need to have enthusiasm. Secondly, yes, this is absolutely true, especially when you're helping people bring their best selves. We are going to have the civility rules, and we're going to model the civility rules. Yes, we're going to talk about it more in depth, but for those of you who are new, the civility rules permeate everything. They're the only rules that Recipe and App for Peace Now actually has. And basically, at the very core, the civility rules say we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude to each other. Yes. Which leads us to our next topic, which I think is going to be empathy. Because you have to have empathy for others. And, you know, you need to encourage others to have empathy for you. As leader too, right? Empathy goes in all directions. Yes, we need empathy so that we can understand our participants and understand the outsiders, the other groups. And they need empathy so they can do the same for us. Yes, and for our group and for our leadership, right? Right. And remember always that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Mm-hmm. How do we get our best selves? People are talking about reputation, and I think that's very important, that you have a reputation for success, a reputation for being the one to call in, right? A reputation for being really, really good at what you do, really excellent, right? Yeah. And I think our best selves also are the most prepared because people are talking about the process itself, right? We're the most prepared. We come into that room. We know what the various issues are, at least to begin with. And then we'll probably find different ones or more or whatever. But we know what we're talking about. Yeah. We know how it's the beginning, at least. And then we listen carefully because we have empathy. And we work towards resolution. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do we encourage our participants to bring their best selves, right? We need them to bring their best selves, too, because otherwise we're not going to have much of a negotiation. Mm-hmm. Yes. How about we create a convivial atmosphere? I'd like to come. I'd like to be in this group. And our reputation, too. Yes, this is the group to be in. This one has the waiting list, right? The other ones are easy to get into because this one's better. Because we're leading it. How about transparency? Transparency in the process. How else do we encourage our participants? By modeling our expectations of civility, efficiency, and enthusiasm. See how I got that all into one sentence? Yes. But a lot of folks are talking about all those things. The modeling our expectations of our participants so they can see that we're doing it too, of civility, efficiency, and enthusiasm. And the ability to, I'm going to make the last one, the ability to connect with others. Because that's very important. Sometimes it's really, you're not there to change biases. Pardon me. Take a sip of water. You're not there to change bias, but you are there to create working relationships. Oh, there, that's better. Sorry about that. Yes, this is a live show, isn't it? Yay! Sorry, didn't mean to kind of cough in your ear. My voice is going out a little bit. You're not really there to repair long-held, lifelong biases. No, you're there to make working relationships so that for this group, at this time, for these issues, we can work together. And you know, the next time something comes up and they have to work together, they already know that although they basically dislike this type of person, I mean, hey, they can work, this individual that they can work with is an exception. They can work with him or her. That's all we need. I mean, it would be nice if that translated into I'm not a bigot anymore. But what we really need is the working relationship. And then the next time issues come up, they'll all know that they can work together with each other because they've done it before and that this would be a reasonable activity, right? Yeah. And so it will build on itself. And hopefully it will cause the bigotry to be reexamined and say, well, gee, that doesn't seem to apply to this type of person. I didn't realize that. Especially bigotry that is not experienced, not an opinion from something you did, but is from learning, from someone told you, and told you it was fact when you were a small child, for example. Yeah. And you know it's not. And you find that out. So let's start our topics before we run out of time. Let's start with ourselves as leaders. And we need enthusiasm, right? Yes, Mohammed says we need to exude enthusiasm. Yes. Hey, I'm enthusiastic about this show. And I sound it, right? Because I like teaching. I like communicating. And I think it's really important. I feel enthusiastic about it. And we've done it for quite a few years now. But you tune in because you go, well, it's kind of interesting. And it's always a new topic, and it always has to do with what we're interested in. Hey, I like that. So enthusiasm goes both ways, both to us feeling enthusiastic and optimistic that we're going to reach our successful outcome. It goes to us, and it goes to our participants. Yeah, I feel enthusiastic about this group, for example. When I tell people about it, right, because my peers count, they go, oh, you're in Sue's group. Wow. I wish I had won the lottery. Yeah. And see, it kind of builds on itself, and then you feel kind of proud that you were smart enough to get in. Yeah? This is good. Yes. So you need to, as Mohammed says, exude enthusiasm. Yes, this is true. People are saying that enthusiasm shows confidence in the outcome. I feel confident that we're going to make this. I feel confident that this is going to be successful. We're going to find a solution. And that makes everybody else feel enthusiastic. Yeah, we're on the right path. We're really getting there. We're really going to do this. This is going to be fine. This is going to be successful. I like this. I like being part of this. Hey, there's nothing wrong with those statements, is there? Yes. Yeah, this is true, too. Elizabeth and others are saying you cannot expect enthusiasm unless, as leader, you show that you believe in the outcome. Yeah, you want your participants to really work, right? You want them to really do what they say they will do. You want them to feel enthusiastic. They can't do that unless you are, right? And you need to show that you have real enthusiasm for the outcome, too, that you really think this is fine. This is going to work. We're going to carry this off, right? Yeah. So the leader has to show that they believe in the outcome, or the participants will not be enthusiastic. And neither will you, come to think of it. We're down to civility rules, which leads people, of course, to feel more enthusiastic. If it's a nice atmosphere, it's civil. Everybody's treated nicely, right? Civility rules basically say we will not be rude to one another, right? We will take turns speaking. I actually usually have a timer where we can time how much time each person gets, unless it's not necessary. Some groups is more necessary than others. But I do like to hear from everybody in the group. You notice some groups get taken over by someone, not kind of accidentally. I have to watch that I don't do that when I sit in groups, because I've got kind of an enthusiastic outward personality, right? And sometimes I realize I have accidentally taken over the conversation. And I go, oh, I've done it again. Yeah, so you want to be careful, because we as leaders are kind of outgoing. And we know a lot, and we're good at it. And you've got to be careful not to accidentally take something over. At least I do. So we've got our civility rules, and one of the main things about civility rules is you have to announce them way before you have any kind of difficulty. Announce the civility rules. Tell people what's going on, right? And then, even if you don't think you need them, and then you need to enforce the civility rules immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. What does that mean? It means that you cannot suddenly have civility rules when things have gone uncivil. No, it's too late. You need to have them in place beforehand and let everybody know that these are the rules. These are the rules of engagement, right? Yes. Yes, this is true, too. If you're going to have civility rules, and you are, you must never lose your temper. It's the civility rules. And everybody will look at that and go, oh, gee, I didn't have to be so polite. We could have all lost our temper. No. You want to never lose your temper and never violate the civility rules yourself. You're the master of them. You're the model. You're the person that's brought them forward. For heaven's sakes, don't violate them. Right? Right. Yes, I suppose this is true under the civility rules. People are saying you get kind of a reputation for different kinds of mediation, different kinds of issues. And I suppose it does come under the civility rules. People are talking about groups. Trevor and others are talking about groups that have formed, been around for a little while, and how shall I put this delicately, have kind of failed. They haven't reached their successful outcome. And one of the problems with those groups oftentimes is a lack of civility. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to talk about transparency later on, and that is the process itself. Well, I suppose we don't have to talk about it later on. We could talk about it now, yes, because people are interested. Sometimes you have a group that is pre-hostile. It's they're feeling really nasty, and they can't see that they could ever reach a successful outcome. They've kind of decided on failure. Does that make any sense? Yeah. They've decided we really can't handle this. We can't do it. We don't know how, and we just can't. In all directions, just can't do it. That is, it needs to have a very, very prepared, very strong leader who becomes the new captain of the ship, right? Yeah. We're going to talk about empathy and preparedness and like that. It's kind of my specialty, those groups that are already kind of hate each other. And we plan, and we actually interface on top of that the civility rules. No, not with the computer. But we actually, and I announce them. I explain there's a new sheriff in town. And we don't violate them. It will change the group dynamic to enforce the civility rules. And when you start out, you are going to have to be like a kindergarten teacher and keep them from violating them, the civility rules. Keep the participants from kind of blowing them off. No, very important. Very important to have everybody feel welcome. Everybody take a turn. I know that a lot of times you pull out a timer, right, in order to take turns if somebody's kind of, well, long-winded-ish. They each get 3 minutes to pitch their product, to pitch their information, to pitch whatever it is they're pitching, right? Their issue, really, what they think should happen. I like to choose a timer. I use a kitchen timer. Because it's in the room, everybody can see it, and nobody feels ripped off, right? The key is to turn it around so that they have respect for the leader and work with each other efficiently, even if grudgingly. You can't change people's core personality, but you can change how they work together. And that's why the civility rules are so important. And now we're going to head into the word empathy, because we need to have empathy all around. We need to have people understand what is going on. Remember that empathy is understanding agreement. Well, it could be agreement too, but not necessarily. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. How are we going to get empathy out of our with our participants, and they to us, because we answer the questions too, right? Because they have to want to work with us as leader. They want to respect us and come back. How do we gain empathy? Oh, thank you. A lot of folk, because you've listened carefully in the past, thank you very much. I'll go for the 5W questions. Yes, who, what, where, when, and why? Who, what, where, when, and why? Open-ended W questions to find out what on earth is going on. And what? Why do you think that? Who told you that? When did you hear it? And why have you brought it to the table? Right? Who, what, where, when, and why? The 5W questions are different questions depending on your circumstances, of course. Right? Right. And they will allow you to understand the workings behind people's opinions. What kind of a preconceived notion they've got, right? You can't change people's absolute ingrained from their mama's knee preconceived notions. You can create a working relationship. Yes. As Suki says, that's very different. Yes, it is very different. I still don't like you, but I can work with you because we're both business people and we both want the same end. We both want things to work out the same. I can work with you. I don't have to be friends with you, go to dinner, but we should need to be able to work together. And now that we have some empathy and we understand where everything's coming from, well, let's work on that. Let's determine how we can make change. People are asking if the questions are all asked at the same time in this order. No, they're flexible. You just keep them in the back of your mind and you find out the answers to these. And then everybody knows. And then you go forward from there, right? Yeah. Yeah, there is a difference. Muhammad and others are saying there's a difference between ingrained bias because of your personal experience and something that you've been taught by your family members, for example, to whom you give a great deal of respect and you think they're probably right. And so you need to really think about it and make an exception, which is why we have the empathy of the 5W questions. They are asked when appropriate. Maybe not even in front of everybody, depending. What about our reputation as our best self? We like a nice reputation in the community, don't we? Now, that's our next topic. Pardon me. Our reputation as our best self. Yes. George and others are saying that's how you get repeat clients. Yes, I have a wait list. Yes, your reputation precedes you. You ever hear that expression? Your reputation precedes you. It means that people hear about you because of your fabulous reputation. Then they want to deal with you because you're the one to see. You're something. You've got real expertise, right? Yeah. And that's very important because it means that you're respected in the community. It also somewhat means that you'll get the same type of case over and over. This is true. Because you'll get a specialty. You'll get something that people know you can handle, and they'll get all excited. But the reputation must be your best self's reputation, and not a reputation for being, I don't know, sloppy, non-transparent, ineffective. No. We're going to work on our skills so that we succeed and our reputation will precede us. People go, oh, Sue. Good. Come on in. Yes. Yeah, reputation does go to the media. A lot of people talking about the media. I have a bias. I kind of like to see the media connected when it's all done, when the sausage is made, when we're proud and we're successful and they can report on that, and not kind of misconstrue what's happening and report something, well, not so enlightened, right? Right. Yes. The media does indeed make reputations nowadays. The media makes reputations, which is fine. But you need to make it a good reputation, right? Which means I have a rule that we don't report while we're doing it. I don't want you to take out your phone, your device, and report all over the place how it's going. We're in the process. It's not pretty, right? And your words are liable to be taken out of context, which happens a lot. So you want to have the media be on your side, but not have leaks from your group, right? Yeah. And that means that you might want even to ban the media until you're done. Or give distractions, right? For some sort of a written thing. But you don't want to report on what's going on while you're doing it because that'll hurt your reputation. Mm-hmm. And if the issues are such that the media really is interested, they'd really like to know because they're reporting, right? Then let's create a media spokesperson, probably us, to actually say what we're doing in a manner that we've all approved of and not just kind of higgly-piggly and just everybody blocking and making a comment. It's not done yet. Don't make comments. And then it being picked up somewhere. Mm-hmm. So let's have a media spokesperson, which is probably us. Yeah, a lot of people, Margaret and others, are saying it's always us. Well, it might or might not be if it was something very technical and you needed advice and you needed an expert to explain it. Mm-hmm. Not everything is right on the top. You might need somebody to explain it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so our next topic is being prepared. And being prepared is nothing to laugh about. It's very important because you need efficiency in the process, right? I think you need an assistant. He's not much of an assistant if you have someone who is inefficient. That might be an intern, for example. I think it is important to have someone keep track of the various subcommittees and teams and what people are doing, right? This someone must truly, they represent you. They must be very, very able to keep track. Then people ask me about the interns. And yes, that's being asked. We have them at Recipe for Peace now. They're fabulous people. They're adults. And they take some training and some watching to make sure that they're doing it right because it's their first time usually, which means that you need someone to devote some time to the interns. Then they need to stay for a while and be able to stay for a while, not just be on a quarterly credits and just one time. Because by the time you take all that time to train them and to really bring them up to speed, they're already leaving. And they'd first gotten good. I think it's important to have at least one paid, very efficient person. I do. I guess that's why. Mm-hmm. So the efficiency, and that person keeps efficiency in the process, right? Needs to watch somebody. Needs to get reports in fairly frequently of how it's going and what we're doing so that we can understand if someone has strayed from the path. Sometimes that happens too. People think that they've got it. They really legitimately do. But when it comes down to it, not so much, right? Because they misunderstood. And you don't want somebody to put in a whole bunch of time and effort and research and like that for something we misunderstood and it's not useful. Yeah. So you need to have an assistant to keep track. Maybe if you're first starting out and you have the time, you can keep track. There's nothing wrong with that. But you will eventually get too busy for the office work, for the things that happen frequently, for the keeping of the calendar, the spreadsheet, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Let's go to participant best self, because they have to bring their best self too, because they're going to be working with you. And you don't want a whole bunch of, adults. Did I say that? So let's go think about our participants for a second. How about a convivial atmosphere for them, right? It needs to be physically comfortable. Yeah, I know, that's not what you generally think of when you say convivial atmosphere. You think about all kinds of psychological factors. But it's a simple thing to clean up. The needs to be comfortable, needs to be accessible, right? Yeah, without too much difficulty. I've seen people meeting in places where the bathrooms are like two flights up. Well, they didn't think about it because they were youngish. But I thought about it. Some of the clients thought about it. They were kind of not so young. Now that we make it up the stairs, yeah. But it wasn't real accessible. It really wasn't. So it's not comfortable to do that. You need to think about accessible. You need to think about the civility rules, right? Yes, a lot of people are talking about the civility rules again. Because all people need to be treated with respect. All people need to be treated with respect. That seems obvious, but it doesn't actually seem to be obvious. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can ask the 5W questions. Yeah, you can do as you please, but what you need to do is you need to have it be something that people want to participate in. Mm-hmm. Make it desirable. One of the ways to make it desirable is to have transparency in the process. Mm-hmm. Primarily because everybody's got a first time once. A lot of times people haven't been particularly. And they need to understand the rules of engagement, right? They need to understand what's going on. They need to say, look, I am in the loop. I'm watching it. Transparency and process, the civility rules are in place, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. And I'd like frequent updates as team leader from my participants, not to the whole group necessarily, maybe to your team, but I'd like frequent updates to make sure that people are heading the right track. And we're not kind of doing a lot of work, but not getting anywhere. Do you ever see that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think the transparency is very important. And you need to keep everybody in the loop. I'm very fond of conducting meetings by Skype, for example, but that has to be set up on your side, somebody else's side. Mm-hmm. Our last topic is the ability to connect with others. Mm-hmm. This is where the preconceived notions come in. Lee and others are talking about the fact that you'll have to set aside some long-held truths. Long-held truths. Well, one person's truth is another person's, well, not truth. Doesn't mean that we're not going to get along. That doesn't mean that we are going to be unable to work this out. We're going to reach our successful outcome. But what happens is your preconceived notions need to modify, mm-hmm, so that you can have a working relationship. You might still not particularly care to go out of town together, right? Yeah, but you need a working relationship, something that everybody is satisfied when the end of the day comes, that we have really gotten somewhere and done something important, done something that will really effectuate successful change. Hey, how much more can you ask for? That's fabulous. Mm-hmm. And in order to do and make these working relationships, we're going to need to get to know each other a little more. We've heard the 5W questions answered. Maybe not all at once, maybe gradually. That is a judgment call by the leader, right? But we're going to now think about each other and the fact that if this ever comes up again, right, these issues spring up again, I can work with this person, these types of issues. I can work with him. He's all right. She's all right. Yeah. For this point in time, these people, right, hey, and in order to do some networking, let's have some food so that we see each other as individuals. Food in the room. The food is a tool. It's not, I mean, you could be hungry, but it's not necessarily meant to be dinner. It's meant as a tool so that we can get to know each other better. And if you're going to use food, and you are, let's take a survey beforehand. And the survey asks, is there any kind of food you don't eat? Any kind of food you're allergic to? Right? or have religious prohibition to, right? Yeah. We want to know if there's something that you can't eat, and we won't put it on the table because the whole idea is a convivial atmosphere, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Before you have food brought in, we're going to take a survey. We're going to ask about those allergies and things, and we're also going to ask people to bring a list. What is in it? So that I can run my eye down the list and see if there's something I can't eat. Right? Yeah, simple as that. So I think we should have I did leave a few minutes. I keep not leaving any time for discussion, but we had a lovely discussion. And I think that we should have a safe recipe. For sure, everybody can eat it. And we've taken the survey. And these items would be familiar to my people. Now, this is a global show, and our adventure recipe, if you might have noticed, is a curry. In my area, a curry is not a very common dish. It might be unusual, but it is something that we all like to maybe taste, right? Yeah. So, today we're going to do the safe one first. It is safe because, well, it doesn't have anything in it that wouldn't be familiar to my people, and we've taken the survey. And we know that they can eat tomatoes, for example, because this has tomatoes. It's the slow cooker potato and beef stew. If you don't want to use a slow cooker or you don't have one, you can simmer it in the room. It'll smell delicious. Mm-hmm. Slow cooker makes it a little softer. It's like braising it. And besides, I really love my slow cooker. I swear that you guys are going to go out and buy one every time we do one of these shows and we have a slow cooker recipe because it's fabulous. You put raw food in the morning. By night, you've got food. You've got a done deal. Oh, pardon me. Took another sip of water. Yeah, so I'm quite in favor of it. And also, of course, you can take it with you kind of all in one. And even plug it in the room so that it continues to smell lovely and to burble away. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, people are saying sous vide at me. People are saying that a lot nowadays. It's the one where you do immersion cooking in the bag. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but it's kind of small portions. It's kind of small amounts, and we're kind of doing a potluck, and I don't have one. But it's something that you might consider, I suppose, in the room. Yes, but it doesn't smell like anything. And one of the reasons that we put it in the room is because of the really tempting and delightful odor that's coming from that simmering pot. Makes everybody want to eat it now. Yeah, and it makes them more convivial because they understand that the faster they can come to a stopping off point, well, the faster we can eat. What can we say? But it's a very good idea. Mm-hmm. Yes. So let's have 2 pounds of beef stew meat. Some sort of a meat that can take some braising. I like chuck roast, personally speaking. It's cheap. It's nice. But any kind of a nice piece of meat, we're going to cut it into pieces. We're going to cut into chunks, small chunks. Mm-hmm. Let's have a 16-ounce can of kidney beans. You know, the beans, you have to rinse and dry them, right? Because they're in slime. And I'm going to use canned. If you want to use fresh, hey, yours will come up better than mine. But you know you use fresh beans, you got to soak them overnight, right? Right. So we've got a 16-ounce can of kidney beans, rinse and dry, and take out any loose shells. We've got 2 15-ounce cans of stewed tomatoes. There's something around here called Italian style. It already has all kinds of yummy herbs, different kinds. Yeah, there's Mexican style and stuff like that. I love those. They've already pre-chopped and everything. Let's take those 2 cans of, hopefully, Italian herb tomatoes, throw them right in the pot, right? Mm-hmm. And this is potato and beef stew. This is a good trick. Somebody actually showed this to me and sent me the recipe. Let's have a 28-ounce or 240-ounce, you know what I mean, a big package of frozen hash browns with the onions and the peppers, yeah? Why not? We don't have to peel, we don't have to dice, we don't have to do anything. There they are. Now, if you would like to do more work than that, certainly you could. But I'm going to go with some packaged stuff. If it's not available to you, you should use fresh. Yes. Mm-hmm. So we've got a slow cooker. You don't even have to brown the meat in the slow cooker. You throw the whole thing in. Just dump in all those ingredients. Dump them in. Cover it. Cook it on a low heat for about 8 hours. That's when you put in the morning and come back at night, right? Or on the higher heat for about 4 hours, right? Yeah. All done. We've put in all those delightful things, and we left. We ignored it. It made food, right? Yay, team. Mm-mm-mm. And everybody likes it. I serve it with rice, personally speaking. The only unitasker I've had, the only appliance that I have that doesn't do more than one thing is a rice cooker, because I do so many of these and I take it with me and then I put it on warming, right? And it keeps it really nice. You do as you please, but you put something on the side. Yes, you might have noticed that this is not a very spicy dish. How about having some condiments on the side to go with it? Yeah, whatever you like. If people like spicy, you could have some onions, right? Some jalapenos, whatever people like on it. Some cheese to go on the top. Yeah. Yeah, I'm believer in making it less spicy. That's also the safe recipe. Less spicy, and then put condiments on the side. Mm-hmm. Yes. I've left time for both of the recipes because we keep not doing any recipes, and I keep getting emails. I know you guys like them, and so that one was the beef and potato stew. Very easy to do if you have a slow cooker. Basic ingredients, we even used frozen hash browns, so we didn't have to dice up potatoes. And they're delicious besides, right? Right. And they are, and they've got peppers and onions right in them. Mmm, yum, yum, yum. But anyway, yeah, if you'd like to do it in not a slow cooker, it'll take a little while, but you have to brown the meat, right? Slow cooker, for some reason, you don't have to brown the meat. Mm-hmm, yes. So let's go on to our adventure recipe before I over-talk our time. And our adventure recipe is coconut chicken curry. It's an adventure recipe because in my neck of the woods, curry is kind of an unusual item. And coconut, quite a few people either don't like or are allergic to it. So, we're going to, and it's going to have some noodles and stuff, delicious. Mm-hmm. Let's have about half a pound, maybe 3/4 pound of rice noodles, of some sort of pasta, right? I like rice noodles in this just because it's more authentic, but you can put any kind of pasta that you want. Let's pre-cook it, right? Rice noodles you soak. They're like ramen noodles. They're kind of yummy in this. I hate to use the word ramen noodles because people faint. But they are kind of yummy. And if not, then pre-cook the pasta. But take the rice noodles, and you know you dip them in boiling water to reconstitute them. Put them aside. Mm-hmm. So let's have 3 pounds, at least, of boneless, skinless chicken breasts that we're going to cut into chunks, into one-inch pieces. Mm-hmm. 2 tablespoons of vegetable oil. I'm going to use frozen stir-fried vegetables. You want a julienne and stuff, new ones, that is better. But I go for the simple and the fast, I'm afraid, right? And the stir-fried vegetables are in the freezer aisle. Refrost them, give them a little pat, right, so they're not wet. Now here's the coconut part. A 14-ounce can of unsweetened light coconut milk. Kind of an unusual thing to add. So this is my safe recipe also, right? Let's have, I'd like a little sugar. I think it balances it off, and I think it goes nice with the coconut. I also like white raisins, or black, dark raisins, if you can't find white ones in this. I know, I just like them. So we're going to have 3/4 cup of raisins that we're going to just add in. And we're going to have a tablespoon of sugar. Let's also have a tablespoon of soy sauce, a teaspoon of red curry paste. You knew I'd get to it. And a little bit of salt and pepper, just not too long because we want it to be a personal choice. So we're going to a nice big skillet. Cook the chicken. Chicken longer pink, right? Cook, cook, cook until it's browned on all sides and there's no more pink left on the chicken, right? You do it in the oil, of course. Then you add the stir-fried vegetable. We cook them for about 4 minutes more, right? It'll make it delightful, and it gets the oil onto it. So we're adding the stir-fried vegetables. Cook, 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 because they're kind of not cooked. They're frozen. We're now going to combine the coconut milk, the sugar, the soy sauce. Did I say curry paste? Did I forget to say curry paste? Did I say a teaspoon of red curry paste? Oh, I did, yes. Okay, thank you. The curry paste, the everything, actually. We're going to bring it to a boil. You've taken this chicken out of the skillet, right? Did I have to say that? You've taken everything out. You can do this in a little separate container, too, but you might as well get the nice juices and stuff in it. You've kind of dumped the skillet. You've pushed the vegetables to the side. You've taken the chicken out. And you've made the coconut milk, the sugar, the soy sauce, the curry paste, maybe a teensy bit of water, depending on what it looks like as you do it, right? Bring it to a boil. Stir in the rice noodles. Bring back the chicken. Put that in. Give it a nice toss around so it's all even and everything's coated. Then we're going to take our nice big skillet and we're going to just simmer it on the stove. Because it's basically cooked, right? We cooked the chicken in the hot oil ahead of time. And nothing else needs to be seriously cooked. We've done the stir-fried vegetables. And so now we've got this delightful skillet full of delicious food. We've even got some noodles into it. You can add a little more pasta to the side. I usually do. I usually put rice noodles like the ramen noodles in it, and then I have brown rice to the side for those of us who would like it. And then I have some ramen noodles all reconstituted to the side for the same reason. Yeah, people like it. Easy to make. It's the adventure recipe because of the curry paste and the coconut, too, I suppose. Everybody likes it, easy to serve. There we have it. We've made our two recipes. Wow. A lot of times we really don't. But we have lovely conversations and we run out of time, which is what we've done now. My friends, we are out of time. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. If you would like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.